This podcast is supported by 23andMe.co.uk, a personalised genetic service available in the UK. The 23andMe genetic analysis is based on a small saliva sample. People in the UK can learn about their genetic information that published studies associate with conditions like blood clotting, cystic fibrosis, and even response to certain medicines. More information is available at 23andme.co.uk.
Salutations, Mets fans, and welcome to this week's edition of Amazing Avenue Audio, the official podcast of your SB Nation New York Mets site, Amazing Avenue. I'm your host, Jeffrey Paternostro, and with me this week is Greg Karam. Greg, last night, Sunday night, we're recording this on Monday night, World Wrestling Entertainment presented Extreme Rules live on pay-per-view on the WWE Network. A pay-per-view full of extreme stipulation matches, like Last Man Standing, Steel Cage, Kiss My Ass, which isn't really extreme, but it's like a WWE thing. Anyway, if you could add one extreme wrestling stipulation to a Mets game, just one Mets game, not like, what would it be?
How about instead of takeout slide at second base, you can actually clothesline the guy you're trying to take out.
So it's just like hardcore rules on all the bases.
Sure. Yeah.
You have like a little pair of brass knuckles like in your stirrups that you pull out when you're about to steal bases and just punch the first baseman on the pickoff throw. That would go badly.
Seems harsh.
I feel like that would go bad quickly.
Yeah. Especially with all the unwritten rules of baseball.
Yeah, you're breaking a lot of unwritten and written probably.
Yeah, probably.
Also written rules in the rule book. I'm a big fan of sort of like the old school 80s NWA, like, you know, Bunkhouse Brawl, Concession Stand Brawl in Memphis. The one I like the best is the Bull Rope Match. A big fan of the Bull Rope Match. WWE had their version in, like, the Russian Chain Match, which is also on last night's pay-per-view. But you have the two competitors tied together with a bull rope, and you have to, like, you can't just pin your opponent. You have to beat them so badly that you can touch all four corners before they get up and stop you, which is kind of silly. But there's also a cowbell in the middle, so you can hit the guy with the cowbell, and he usually bleeds. But I would just attach the bull rope to each team's middle infielders, because the Mets would have a huge advantage, because it would not affect Daniel Murphy or Wilmer Flores' range at all.
I can see it.
Yeah. It's a long way to go for that joke, but here we are. And this is episode 115, also titled the Well, Here We Are edition, because Well, Here We Are is 2015. We've caught up. We go into the future. Next episode. I don't know what to do with that. It'll probably just be like the turn forward. I can get like one episode out of like the turn forward the clock Mercury Mets thing. But only one, and then we're just done.
Yeah.
So I said last week on this very show, Greg, that if the Mets went 2-1, took 2 out of 3 from both the Braves and the Yankees, we'd have to have like a serious conversation about the Mets being good, because we're an eighth of the way through the season now.
Yeah.
And they went 3-0 and 1-2, which comes out the same, mathematically speaking. Admittedly, it might leave a little bit less of a good taste in your mouth, and you get some silliness from the NYC tabloids, but you're going to get that anyway. So we can now have the conversation about the 14-5 Mets, and again, according to sources familiar with the MLB standings, that's the best record in baseball.
It is.
So we'll talk about that. Talking about the B-Mets, who I saw for four, I'm going to charitably call, brisk days in Manchester, New Hampshire. And we'll answer your emails. This is episode 115, and we start off with this question, Greg Karam. Mets were 10-3 this time last week when we recorded. They are now 14-5. Have we learned anything new?
Well, no, not really. I mean, not that much has changed, I don't think. they were able to continue to roll over some lesser team, and they struggled against a decent team in the Yankees. And I mean, struggled, you know, close games, at least last night was. So I don't know. I mean, and on the road, it's a good team, I think. I think they're going to be competitive. You know, they have solid depth. They have good starting pitching. They seem like, you know, an above average baseball team. And I think that's what people thought last week as well. I mean, I don't think anyone was actually thinking that they were going to go and win 135 games.
They're still on pace for 119 entering play tonight. I mean, the Yank series was weird. I think they're probably, like, similar true talent levels as teams this year, and it's three games on the road in that park. So I'm not going to read too much into it. You know, the media can get whatever grist they want out of that series. That's their job, and they're going to do that. I do think maybe if you want to look at it as sort of a microcosm of the team, I think it revealed maybe some weaknesses that might come into play later in the season, when they're, you know, competitive and hopefully in a playoff race and still good. As I alluded to in our opening question, and this is not a surprise to anyone, the middle infield, and this wasn't just on display in this series, the middle infield defense is bad.
Yeah.
You know, with Flores, at least for now, the always year, making the trade-off. He's been hitting. He's looked better at the plate the last 2 weeks. So, all right, you live with it. Even though there'll be annoyance on Twitter every time he gets congratulated for making a routine play, or making a routine play look more difficult than it is, he has to make a big throw from his backhand. But he's been objectively bad as a shortstop. Like, unplayable for me, your mileage may vary. And Murph, I'm not super worried about that. You know, he'll be here till May 20th. That's when you get back the month plus of service time for Dilson Herrera. And then, you know, maybe the organization is not as invested in Daniel Murphy, especially the 1 year of Daniel Murphy they have left under cost control, than they are, I think, in the Wilmer Flores shortstop experiment.
I don't think that. That's one of the things that's been going on early on. I think there's been a lot of overreaction, because we're at that time where it feels like enough time has gone by where we can start, like, making firm decisions and based on what's happening this year. But look, this is, you know, Murph's going to be Murph. He's gonna bounce back. He's going to give you bad defense, and he's going to hit you, you know, your 280, 320, 410, and he's going to give you about two wins. I mean, that's what Murph's probably going to do. I think that we would be jumping the gun if we went down that road.
No, I'm not saying that he won't get there. I'm saying more that if he doesn't get there, if he continues to look awful at the plate, I think they'd be more willing to move on from Murphy during the season than they will with Flores. Flores's three home runs in the last 2 weeks has basically bought him till at least the All-Star break. Even if he does next to nothing for the next 2.5 months.
Yeah, that seems right.
The other thing I think we got to start thinking about, and anyone listening to this podcast is on the internal Slack list for the site, knows I've been beating this horse for 2 days now, but they need another bat somewhere. And, you know, so there's a couple things. You get towards the trading deadline, you're in a playoff race, they're going to want, you know, you're going to want another power arm, like an established power arm for the pen, probably, like a setup dude. You're going to want a serious lefty bench back that's not Kirk Nieuwenhuis, and I like Kirk Nieuwenhuis, but you want a serious lefty bench bat. But those are always available and always traded at the deadline anyway. Like, every contending team usually needs that, or something in that general vein of player. And as I discovered today, they have a huge 40-man crunch coming this offseason between guys going to have to add for Rule 5 protection, you know, the 60-day DLs, guys coming back on, and only a few 40-man slots opening up with free agents. So they might be better served to move some of those sort of back-end 40-man guys or potential 40-man guys for the, you know, the another setup man. Like, I don't know who it's going to be, but some established major league reliever. Or for a lefty, you know, a veteran lefty bench bat. You know, Sean Green or whatever. Not Sean Green, obviously, but